Welcome to our next installment of the Rebels of the Heart virtual conference series. It's been an ongoing segment where we feature great leaders across all different areas of business, different companies, really showing the next generation of leadership and what leadership with a heart looks like in terms of rebels breaking the rules, creating new rules, and establishing what a healthy business and personal relationship can look like. I'm Derek Lunston, CEO of Life Guides, and we're building a platform for caring people to do extraordinary good by using technology to match people who have been through a life challenge of some sort with those who are going through the same or a very similar experience now, to provide peer-to-peer mentorship, support, and guidance to help people be happier, healthier, and more productive in both their work life and home life, and where those come together. J.V. Crum III, my dear friend, welcome to Rebels with a Heart. It is an honor to have you on here. This is a long time in the making. Thanks for joining us.
Well, Derek, I am excited, and mainly I'm excited because of all the amazing people that you have listening. I just want to say hi to everybody and thank you for being here.
Absolutely. And they're going to be graced to hear your wisdom and expertise. So my first question for you, which is a layup, is what does Rebels with a Heart mean to you? What does it mean to be a rebel with a heart in the context of your life and business?
Well, since we brought up generational right before this, I'll kind of do a trifecta answer of that. So on my father's side, and I have the documents, 115 pages that were created in the 1800s, we came over in 1657 from Amsterdam to New Amsterdam. So I think that's pretty rebel, you know, with a heart to do something new. I have all the births through 1920 when my dad was born. And on my mother's side, I'm a direct descendant of Edmund Randolph, first governor of Virginia. Wow. And I have a piece of cut glass he brought over. And there comes Conscious Millionaire. I'm going, well, this is like I'm a rebel, like with a cause, actually, but definitely with a heart. And I deserve to be a rebel because I came from rebel people. You know, the early people who come over to the United States, they were all rebels.
Seeking something different, carving their own path, right? Yeah.
That's exactly right. And I work with entrepreneurs who want to carve their own path, but they want to do it specifically with purpose. They want to have a purpose-driven mission. And that purpose isn't something they made up in a boardroom. That purpose comes out of their heart. That's where we start. Is like,
yes,
your heart is the place that you should be building your business from, not doing an analysis of what's missing in the marketplace. You might want to do that, but it has to be compatible with your heart. And that determines your vision and the impact and the kind of business you're building and the culture and the people you invite to be on your team all have to resonate with that vision. Or in my mind, you're not building a business that's really going to have the impact it could have.
We completely agree on that, as the purpose, as a driving force, it's in the blood, so to speak, and coming from one's heart. So you mentioned your venture, Conscious Millionaire. Talk a little bit about that and where that started from your purpose and your vision around that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I started out with my vision at five. Grew up in a little town, 200 or 300 people in Central Florida on this big lake. Everybody was poor. Nobody had any money. My mother used to give me a lecture before we got out of the car to go to the grocery store. And I went by James. She'd go, James, do not ask for the candy bar, because we didn't have the money to pay for the candy bar. And she wanted everybody to know that we, you know, she wanted people to perceive us as poor. Mm. And one day I'm sitting around and I'm going, well, what's the solution to the candy bar? Literally, I became a millionaire to solve the solution of how to buy a candy bar. And I said, I know, I'll grow up and be a millionaire. And I, you know, flew into the house to announce to my parents I had discovered the miracle of life. I would become a millionaire. And at 25, I did. I had the four-story home, the Mercedes, and all that. And within 3 months, I was on the water. I one day was standing in my living room. And as I tell this, I always go right back to that moment. That I had palm trees in my front lawn because it's Florida. You have to do that. They're blowing in the wind. There's sailboats out on the bay. And I had a total meltdown that only took 60 seconds. I said, I remember saying this out loud, something's wrong with this picture. Mm. And I said, I know how to make money, but I don't like myself. I'm horrible at relationships. Trust me, ask anybody I had one with. Not very good at that. And there was this horrible feeling inside that something terribly was wrong here. And I'm so grateful that I had just enough money at that time to have the awakening to what in the money. Because as a little boy, living in the culture that we all live in, we're told over and over and over, get the money, get the financial freedom, life's going to be wonderful. Nope. I just had a really nice house and a Mercedes, but my life was no better. And I went off on spiritual journeys and Wayne Dyer and sweat lodges and everything. And I said, what is this thing that's missing? And ultimately lived at a Buddhist monastery, did all this kind of stuff.
So you were doing this all before the moment that you had this realization? You were exploring?
Yes. All of this was lived at ESLIN, which is the Human Potential Institute on the Big Sur Coast, which is breathtakingly beautiful. Yeah. And then I had the revelation of Conscious Millionaire. And it actually came in a hot tub, because I'm a hot tub kind of guy. And I was reading a brochure for a green festival. And I'd been thinking for about 2 years, you know, I want to teach people about being a millionaire. But at that point in time, there were so many selling millionaire in a box for $1,000 or $5,000. It didn't matter what the price was, but it was all vapid. It was all empty. It was like, oh, you get this, you'll get your Lamborghini and all that. And I saw the word conscious. And my intuition is very visual most of the time. And in my forehead, I saw the phrase conscious millionaire. And I got a tingling in my spine. And I said, that's it. That's the answer that I want to give to the world. And being a good attorney, after I got out of the hot tub, but I savored it because I knew it was waiting, I bought consciousmillionaire.com. I filed my trademarks. The rest is history. And Conscious Millionaire, I realized, was I want people to be wealthy. You know, I'm not interested in working with people who don't actually want to be rich, but I want them to be rich in a way that fulfills them. And I learned that you don't get fulfilled unless you live from the heart. That if you're living any other way, you can, you know, like you think of the stereotypical Silicon Valley, you know, mega rich person, whatever that number is. And they're lost in thinking, oh, I've got the red Lamborghini, but if I just get the yellow Lamborghini, life would be perfect. And of course it won't be, because they're looking for something out there, but they haven't looked inside. And I think when you build a business by first looking inside, that's where I like to help people, is get clarity about who are you? Why are you on this planet? And what does playing big actually look like for you?
And is that how you define conscious, those three questions? Is that what it means to be conscious in the context of a millionaire or a business creator or a
person? Well, actually, I have three levels of conscious I talk about. The first one is awareness. Now, awareness in and of itself can go in all kinds of, especially when you've lived at a Buddhist monastery and you meditate. But awareness of even what do your clients want? What's going on in your industry? How does business work? So you got to have an awareness of how this thing called business works. But then the next level down is conscious in the sense of visionary. Like if you say somebody's a visionary leader, usually you mean they've got this conscious vision of the future that's different than now. Or someone's a visionary business person like Steve Jobs, you know, here's my iPhone. Why? Because Steve dreamt it up, connected to higher consciousness. So it's that level of expanding your personal consciousness into something that's a bigger flow. And then the third is socially conscious, which is a lot of businesses today are solving major world problems in a way that's socially conscious and also building extremely profitable, thriving businesses.
So to that point, how do you see the role of businesses in this evolving collective consciousness? You know, we're literally in the world of tremendous uncertainty presently today, right?
Chaotic.
Over the last several years, how do businesses, how do leaders, how do entrepreneurs, how do conscious creators build with intention to make influence that change in your mind?
In my mind, they start with that inner heart and they really focus on what is that big vision. So, you know, I'm going to digress, but I'll come right back. I've been on a lot of shows and I've been doing a lot of programs lately. And people ask me, well, what's the biggest reason someone's not a millionaire? Or if they're a millionaire, why aren't they worth a lot more? And I go, well, actually, it's pretty simple. They're thinking small thoughts. And if you think small thoughts, you talk in your mind about small problems. And you actually waste your day on small problems that are really not that important. And you try to solve small problems in the marketplace. So it really starts, and they could have a big vision in their heart, but they're only letting a tiny bit of it come through their consciousness. And they're staying really small when that vision could be expanded So it's like it starts in the heart, but then look at it as a funnel going outward. You've got to expand that vision as to what's possible. And I use Elon Musk as an example in my first Million Masterclass. And I go, you know, how many people think that Elon Musk is going to send a rocket to Mars with people on it? And actually, everybody says yes. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, let's turn the question. Do you believe you're going to send a rocket to Mars with people on it? And almost everybody says no. I say, well, what's the difference? Is Elon just that much smarter? I mean, yeah, he hires rocket scientists, but that's pretty smart. But he only hires ones that believe it's possible. And I go, I think it's all about pressability. First, Elon Musk believes it's possible. And second, he believes it's possible for him, or he wouldn't do SpaceX. He wouldn't do all this stuff, right? He wouldn't do Tesla. And that's the big difference. It's not that you have a small heart purpose. I think everybody has a huge heart purpose. It's how big are you going to allow that vision to become? And that determines literally the impact you're going to have in the world, the size of business, the number of people who are going to join you on the team, and what you're going to build is going to be determined by you opening up the vision of how you let this heart purpose come out.
So let's just say that as we agree, first off, let's just say that the rebel with a heart concept is exactly that, amplifying more people to have bigger visions and to rally around bigger visions. How do we start to transmute that, not just to entrepreneurs, not just to leaders of companies, but the people, the everyday people who are in businesses, the people who don't necessarily connect to or don't even realize that, right? We're showing a way, if you will, on how to break free and to create new paths for purpose, for creation, for wealth, for opportunity, for fulfillment, whatever you want to define it as. What does that look like from your perspective to the broader world?
Yeah, that's such a great question because I frequently talk about conventional versus conscious path.
Yeah.
And conventional is just normal business. You're about making money. Most of what's on CNBC, it's not like it's a bad channel. They just talk about conventional business. They don't talk much about conscious business. And in fact, I think the conventional business world thinks conscious business somehow isn't real. Like you're not going to make a lot of money if you're doing that. When in fact, I think you'll make the most money in the next 10 to 20 years. But when I talk to people, I've learned that the most important question I can ask anyone is, are you on your authentic path? That opens up the door. And, you know, I never get into what your political views, what your religious views, I don't care. I care, are you living your authentic path at the deepest, most profound level? And that opens the door to heart. Because heart and authenticity are connected. And then you can begin a conversation. Well, okay, you've got this kind of business, but is it really fulfilling your heart? What would you be doing if your heart was fulfilled every day and you feel like you were making the impact that you're on the planet to make? And people can either say, like, and I did, you know, I owned with my dad a regional trucking line. I sold it because it did not fulfill my heart. It wasn't the path that I was to be on. And I needed to go find a path that would allow me to fulfill my heart.
Well, let me share something I learned yesterday. So I had Whitney Johnson on. You may know of Whitney or know Whitney on the show yesterday. And she shared a statistic that had been done, I think, by Gallup. Or I can't remember. But they did a pre-pandemic survey and a post-pandemic survey of CEOs of, you know, the Fortune 500, for example. I think that was the cohort. Prior to the pandemic, 26% of these executives saw personal transformation as critical to the success of their business. Only 26%. Post, 80%.
Wow.
80% strongly agree that personal transformation is a critical element of you know, progressing their companies. And I was incredibly encouraged by that statistic because it shows a level of, to use your word, awakening that's happening in conventional business of CEOs who have access to resources, organizations, possibilities, who are examining their belief systems and that connection to their heart in a new way, potentially. And I think that's exciting, especially when you look at what's happening around us. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that statistic. Well,
so that's very heartening for me as well, because that's the kind of work that I do with people and then helping them build the business. You and I've had lots of conversations about the impact that the pandemic, of the positive impact that the pandemic has had on me. It was an adjustment the first couple of months because I'm the guy who goes used to go out three or four nights a week to jazz clubs and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, I wasn't doing that. And I took a deep spiritual journey and a deep introspect. I mean, what Conscious Millionaire is today and what it was 2 years ago, it's a completely different company. Now, we're still have the same underlying philosophy, but now I'm focused on how do I help people go from not just being high performers, but limitless performers, limitless in their impact. And it's about going through levels of transformation about your purpose and your identity and how big you can play on the planet. And I too came to the same conclusion that all these people did was 2 years ago, my coaching was almost entirely external. And it wasn't that I didn't like the internal stuff, but I'm going, I don't think people are really going to buy that. And now that's what I sell with the external added on. So it's like, you've got to transform and we got to redo your strategies and you might have the wrong team, but those aren't going to matter till you transform. And I think that's where we're headed. I think that's the rest of this decade. I think next decade, I think the transformational businesses, the ones I call a conscious business, is ones that's solving a problem that uplifts humanity. That to me is a practical.
Yeah. So I mean, I know you're a visual person. You have this big vision. What does it look like for you 10 years out from now? How does Conscious Millionaire, how does the Institute, how does the work you're doing?
So 10 years from now, Conscious Millionaire will have sold and transitioned to a larger company that's going to take the mission and integrate it into theirs because it's consistent with their mission. But they're going to take and implode, you know, this on a higher level. And I'm in the process of building a global nonprofit, Conscious World Foundation, where I want to have literal physical centers in 100 countries. So you might as well, this is a perfect lesson. I don't believe in having small outcomes as your targets. It's actually easier to have bigger outcomes because people get in energized by it and you're more energized. So I want to be working with 18 to 25 year olds all over the world, training them to be conscious leaders to answer one question. How do we build a world in which everyone can win? Because right now we're still building a zero sum world. That's the underlying belief system. And I believe in infinite abundance. So if there's infinite abundance on a practical level, everybody can win. How do we build that world? And that to me is what I'll then be doing 10 years from now. I'll be on boards. I'll be doing investment. But 80% of my time will be devoted at that point to building the foundation. That's the vision I have.
So let me ask this question, because I like that vision, but why? Why 18 to 25? Why wait until that point to give people the...
That's such a great question because it's a question I've been asking myself. I've been thinking, well, the 18 to 25 year old, let's first ask why 18 to 25 year olds? Yeah. Because they're entering college or that age where they're making adult decisions about what they want to do with their life. So I want to give them training programs that transform them to a higher level of consciousness. And then they can be like seeds in all these countries going out in whatever profession or businesses they build. You know, I think that we might even have formats where we teach them how to build a conscious business. That's a whole nother piece. But I had, like you, I've been really researching the importance of like 0 to 5 years.
Yes.
Yep. And that if children don't get emotional stimulation, emotional intelligence, consciously evolving, how do they make decisions on their own? How do they interact with other people? How do they get encouraged rather than being told no all the time, which is very frequent? You know, it was the pattern I grew up with. They're told yes, go explore that, you know, and they have some what sounds like a crazy idea. It's like, yeah, go get the Tinker Toys and build it.
Yes.
You know, what will that look like? You know, so it is possible. It is possible as this vision comes together that we could have preschool K to 12 and then have the 18 to 25 year olds become leaders.
Yeah. And arguably you could bring the parents of these children to that's getting them together, right? To be building and collaborating and really bringing.
I know. It's just like when I was five, we'll just change the whole world. We'll uplift humanity to every part of the world and we'll do it at every level. How's that?
That sounds perfect. Let's do it.
Yeah. I think the trilogy, though, would be the 0 to 5, the K to 12, and the 18 to 25, because that's the future generation. That's the one I want to influence because they'll have the biggest impact overall.
Well, I agree with that. And I think the interesting part of the last, again, back to the, you know, some of the positives of the last 2 years, you know, obviously it's incredibly polarizing the people's perspective on public education, on some of the policies, on things that are happening right now, but it's also forcing parents and communities systemically to evaluate our educational system and how the decisions they're making. I mean, I can speak to it firsthand as a parent, right? So, and I think that's going to continue to intensify with what's going on. And I think that, you know, that was a perfect window to build new educational models and systems that are in line with what you're describing. So,
well, it's interesting because when I step back, I have a large view that what's going on all over the world in many areas, certainly politically, how people have responded to the pandemic, et cetera, is pure chaos. But that chaos, having lived at a Buddhist monastery, having studied especially Eastern philosophy and Eastern approaches, from my perspective, chaos is a necessary element in transformation. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's unavoidable. You cannot go from one system to another system without there being chaos in the middle of it. That's just how it works. Yep. And when I look around the world and I go, even things like, you know, Putin attacking Ukraine, which is, it's unknowable how many changes that will bring about in world order, and especially in Europe and Eastern Europe. And you go, on the one hand, you can go, this is horrific. And on the other hand, you can go, this is part of the chaos. Mm-hmm. That you have to go through the dismantling of the current way of life to get to the next way of life, which I think is a much more conscious way of life.
Yeah.
That in no way justifies what's going on. I'm not justifying it. I'm just commenting on it. That you can get lost in the horrificness of the moment, or you can step back and go, oh, what does this mean in terms of where we're going as a human population? Because already you know that there's going to be a backlash to this. And kind of like the pandemic, you can just go, oh, well, this is horrific that I didn't get to go to jazz club. Or you can go, oh my gosh, I took a deep inner journey that I would never have taken. And you know, within 2 months of the pandemic, so let's just go March of 2024, I all of a sudden had a new frame because I was going out to the concerts and I was going out, you know, jazz clubs and independent film and all this. I realized a new perspective. Mm. And I said, wow, all of that was actually a way I distracted myself from going deeper. And I thought it was a way that I actually expanded myself because I was getting jazz, which I love, and all that. And I'm going, no, now that all that's taken away, I have silence. And in the silence, I experience myself and the universe differently.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that you shared that, because that was kind of going with my question, which you may have been picking up on, for how do people pause themselves? How do they intentionally create silence so that, because, you know, we're conditioned, we're physiologically conditioned to be reactive as human beings. How do they disrupt that pattern so that they're able to step back in the frame and look at the bigger picture of how this chaos is somehow serving our evolution as a species, or serving our evolution as a society? And to your point, wipe away the noise, all the distractions that are coming our way to influence people, as opposed to going inward and hearing our own collective consciousness, right?
Well, I think that there are kind of two approaches, and I've used both. One is that I'm someone, when I now look back and go, well, how have I journeyed so far? I've been taking these deep kind of journeys since the beginning, right? You know, where I'll do things like go live at a Buddhist monastery, go live at Esalen, or go do deep intensives. So you can do some kind of a work. I call it work, a piece of work, because I'm initially trained as a therapist. So a piece of work by going and immersing yourself for some X amount of time that takes you out of your normal, which I think is incredibly valuable. The other thing you can do is, on a very practical level, everybody can create moments in their day that are set aside for this. For example, I'm going to promote Sirius Radio, but not in a way that they might like. I don't think I've had it on in at least a month in my vehicle, because what I discovered, mainly I think from living at the Buddhist monastery, which was over 20 years ago, is that my favorite sound is silence. I seem to crave silence. So when I'm in my vehicle, I go, oh, you could turn on the music or you can have silence, right? And I usually opt for silence. And, you know, there have been times I have great stereo systems and they won't be on for a couple of months. And people go, oh, don't you listen to a lot of music? No, I'd rather have silence.
The role of solitude in one's life.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've actually described at times that my homes were like really nice monasteries because, you know, surround myself with art, but kind of live in silence. You know, like I don't have any cable TV, you know, I don't even have the option of watching television because I'd rather have the silence. So it's about making some decisions like that.
Yeah.
And you can just start with a little bit of silence or 5 minutes of meditation, but creating space to allow yourself to connect with your deeper self, but connect with something bigger than you as well. That doesn't come from busyness. It comes from emptiness.
Beautiful. JV, how can our listeners learn more about you, your work? How can they find you and I can communicate with you, share your details with our team, our audience here?
Yeah, sure. If you want to listen to the podcast, which Derek has been on and great guest, we're 6 days a week. And that's at consciousmillionaireshow.com. I'm doing masterclasses right now, First Million Masterclass. So if you're in that six-figure level that wants to get to seven, you can go to the firstmillionmasterclass.com and sign up. I'd love to have you. And you can just reach out to me. I'm going to give you my cell phone. I've been doing this for 3 years. Hal Elrod is a friend. We were talking last week. I just had him back on the show. And when I was on his show, it just spontaneously came to me to give out my cell phone and say, hey, if you want to talk to me about any of the stuff I'm doing, if you want to evolve in some way, let's have a chat. Here's my cell phone, 303-641-0401. And I'm in Denver, but you know, you can call anytime because I have my iPhone trained to go to sleep at 9 p.m. and it doesn't wake up until 6 a.m. So it's not going to bother me. Leave me a text. Leave me a voicemail. Love to hear from you.
Beautiful. JV, thank you for your generosity of spirit. Thank you for sharing your Rebel with a Heart today. And looking forward to continuing our conversations and to spotlighting the work that you're doing in this world and for society.
So, well, thank you so much for having me.